You are listening to the Mindful Marketing Show podcast, episode 16.
Welcome to the Mindful Marketing Show with Kimberly Maska. You are about to be empowered as we teach you the best marketing strategies used by today's spiritual entrepreneurs. Get ready to share your message and inspire people worldwide.
Hello, I am Kimberly Maska, your Mindful Marketer, and I would like to welcome you to the relaunch of the Mindful Marketing Show, the podcast for spiritual entrepreneurs who are ready to change the world with their gift and have a business that reflects their authentic self. To celebrate the relaunch, I have a free gift for you. It is the Jumpstart Your Spiritual Business Guide. In it, you will find all of the tools you need to, well, jumpstart your spiritual business and create an abundance of time, money, and freedom. Don't wait to share your gift with the world. Get your copy of Jumpstart Your Spiritual Business today at mindfulmarketingshow.com. Now, before we jump in, this episode is brought to you by Kickstart Cart, my shopping cart of choice for myself and my clients. It has everything you need to create the business of your dreams with passive income, or as I like to call it, making money while you meditate. Picking the right shopping cart for your business is a big deal, and it can be very confusing. So what I have done is created a free workshop for you to help you through the decision-making process. You can find this free shopping cart workshop at mindfulmarketingshow.com/kickstart. That is mindfulmarketingshow.com/kickstart. Now let's listen to this episode. Enjoy. Hello and welcome. I am Kimberly Maska, your host of Mindful Marketing, the podcast where today's mind, body, spirit thought leaders discuss the latest strategies to build your business and take the icky out of marketing. Joining us today is Suzanne Matheson, creator of the Center for Mindful Leadership. Suzanne has been teaching, coaching, and writing about integrated mind-body approaches for over 2.5 decades. Her work involves applying mindfulness-centered practices toward progressive leadership education. She approaches mindfulness as a whole person skill set where the wellness of one's body is equally as important as the calmness in his or her mind. Hello, Suzanne, and thank you so much for joining me on Mindful Marketing today. How are you?
I'm great. And first off, let me say thank you so much for the opportunity to connect with you and all your podcast listeners. I'm really grateful to be here. And hi, everybody. I hope you're all doing well.
That's awesome. Sending our love. So I'd love to talk a little bit about your Center for Mindful Leadership. And as everyone knows, I talk about mindfulness all the time in our marketing podcast here. So what was your personal journey that took you down that path? And how did you start the Center for Mindful Leadership?
Well, I'll try to nutshell this as best as I can. Mindfulness has been part of my life since I was a little kid. And it first came into my life. I mean, most people hear about the Buddhist beginnings of mindfulness. And for me, it actually came in during when we'd say grace at holiday meals. And it included a phrase, "and make us ever mindful of the needs of others." And as a little kid, that really stuck with me. You know, I thought, well, what does that mean? You know, and so, and I was into, you know, writing at an early age. So I was into discovering what words meant and what all that looked like. And it was a few years later, I came across the Buddhist understanding of mindfulness, its present moment focus. But I still came back to how I interpreted mindfulness at an early age, an awareness and understanding of other people and to be empathetic to them and attentive to them as fellow human beings, because that was my first exposure. So I melted it in with the golden rule, another thing that I was learning, you know, as a kid growing up, and it all seemed to make sense. And I really do think that's a fundamental characteristic of somebody who's mindful. So I then went on a journey of discovery, of learning about all kinds of things, and I went on to study all different types of meditation, and I worked with a teacher in Los Angeles in the mid-80s, and he spoke a lot about what he called spiritual etiquette. Now, unfortunately, he didn't walk his talk, and I left being a student of his, and eventually he got taken out by money and power, and he actually committed suicide some years later. But he instilled in me this passion for carrying on his work in that area, as I could see the importance of ethics and etiquette as a spiritual practitioner to have a, you know, this is the Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, teach your children, to have a code you can live by while you're traveling down the road. And I really took this to heart. And I began to write about it and teach about it and the different ways you could in the, you know, the early 90s wasn't as much available back then. And then one day after 9/11 happened, I was meditating with just simple breath awareness. And literally the word mindfulness came into my inner field of vision in like these big letters. And in a flash, I realized that spiritual etiquette and the golden rule and mindfulness, as I first came to know it, were all really similar. And that mindfulness was a vessel that I was being called to use as a container for what I was teaching. And I do feel it's a calling as well as a vocation. So when you cultivate greater self-awareness through mindfulness practices, and you're able to see and non-judgmentally accept that we all have some work to do on ourselves, and it can be done with kindness and compassion and a healthy sense of humor, I knew in my heart at that moment that my writing skills, my coaching skills, and teaching about mindfulness was really my life purpose. And that came a little later in life for me. Not everybody gets that hit, you know, right when they're in their 20s. And that's not necessarily bad or good. But it came to me in my life when I was in my 40s. So I had to put the years of awareness building to really get there, to really be able to authentically share what I've learned. And I've been a hypnotherapist for over 20 years. And I learned how to work with mindfulness using that 12% of your conscious mind, that tip of the iceberg that's above the water, to deal with the 88% that's below the water. It's our subconscious mind. And begin to learn how to override a lot of that mindless autopilot awareness that can run our thoughts and our choices and our behaviors in the ways that don't allow us to become our best self. And I was doing this for a few years, and I had been writing some columns on living mindfully for a publication in Atlanta. And I had a woman contact me who was still is the CEO of eMindful out of Florida. And she read one of my columns on approval addiction, and she contacted me, and one thing led to another, and she invited me to be one of their first online mindfulness educators for corporate employees, which I did with them for almost 3 years. And their main emphasis is on wellness and stress reduction and eating more mindfully. And after teaching with them, teaching hundreds of corporate employees, I had this pull to really move towards mindful leadership education, to teach about those ethical skills and transformational life skills that mindfulness can also offer. So I took the leap and said, I'm going to create my center for mindful leadership. It's a virtual center, which is great because that allows us to be all over the world. And I took the leap, and then people began to come to me who are attracted to how I present mindfulness.
That's a great
story. So that's kind of the nutshell of a long journey to get there.
As long as we're on the journey, right? That's the key. We're on the path.
Never-ending journey and adventure.
So what was it that, so you know now it was going to be your business. What was like the first step you took in making it from this is my passion to now it's going to be a thriving business?
Well, I think the first thing to make anything a thriving business is, and especially in this field, because it can be challenging. It really needs to be your true calling, your genuine life person. It has to be something, you know, you just know you can't not do it. And so no matter how much money you're making or not making, it's just who you are. It's an extension of your being into the universe. And so that it really is your calling. You're supposed to be doing it. And that's what keeps you to going through when you're building and you're trying to figure out, well, how do I make this a business? That has to be kind of a foundation. And it makes you grateful for when the gravy times came in, when you started to get that success and you knew that you were honoring what some force, some whatever you want to call it, was telling you, you know, through my little flash of mindfulness in my meditation, that this was what it was supposed to be. And I never had this desire to be a spiritual celebrity. And I've actually, over my life, seen some of those big names really not walk their talk. And that was something I also wanted to teach, because I think it's a disservice to those that you trust and give your hard money to, that if you're not authentic. And so being authentic is also a real important thing to me. You know, as Maya Angelou said, you must live what you teach. And I'd add to that, if you don't, you really have no business teaching what you don't live for yourself. So the bottom line was really having the authenticity. And authenticity attracts people who authentically align with your vision and perspective. So that's the groundwork that has to be there. And then there's the practical level. You know, your feet on the ground while your head's up in the stars, right? You can't just go, oh, I'm going to, you know, have this and I don't really know how to have a business. You have to learn the skill sets. And I like to learn everything. I'm a geek. And so I was able to learn how to do, you know, how to create a website and create a blog and all the things that I needed to do at first when it was just kind of me, you know, just getting myself out there. So as entrepreneurs, I think we all need to learn how to wear those different hats and have that, you know, large scalability, and then be able to also delegate, you know, what we can to other people. And we just can let go of things and say, well, you know, I can do it, but I'm going to let this person do it so I can create more room to do what my larger purpose and passion is. So I just followed all of that, but really it was the foundation of authenticity. And when we talk about law of attraction, I think that it is people are attracted to that more than anything else.
I love that. And I don't know if you've seen, I have mindful marketing tips that I post every week. And authenticity is one of my favorite things to talk about.
Well, it's just so true. And people are too sharp anymore. They can, you know, they can tell.
Yep, that's for sure. They know a phony when they see
really
them.
Fake it. I mean, they always say fake it until you make it. No, you can't fake it. You are who you are and you make it with who you are.
Exactly.
That's my philosophy.
So what marketing strategy has worked best for you in reaching your ideal client?
Well, I think the best thing always has been, it always will be, word of mouth. Nothing really translates as well as somebody that's just really happy with what you've done. And like I said, people are really sharp these days and they've got really well-honed BS detectors. You know, they don't want to be hyped, and you can create a fancy website and you can have all this appearance of being a certain way and use all the right buzzwords and all the right, you know, professionally recorded videos and MP3s and have 10,000 social media followers. Yet the proof is really in how you show up with your students or your clients. And so all of that accoutrement outside really is not as important, except as for what you do and how you show up. And with what I do, you have to be able to work with people through their difficulties. And if a teacher hasn't made it through those inner mazes and those dark nights of the soul many times, his or herself, and picked themselves back up and gotten themselves out there, again, they don't really have that experience to guide students through both their dark inner waters and those bright aha moments. So I'm kind of getting long-winded with this, but I think I'm kind of coming back to the same thing I said earlier, is just showing up and being authentic. And I know we live in a youth-obsessed culture, yet in terms of mindfulness teachers, I kind of have a reverse of the 60s mantra, don't trust anyone under 30 to die. Now, I'm kind of kidding here. I don't want to judge anybody that's younger is not qualified, but I think part of the marketing strategy that works for a lot of us that teaches mindfulness practice is our experience and, you know, what we've done in the school of life that we've been through. And the main thing I think is it's really important is that the years of practice itself really grounds you in knowledge and experience. And that's what comes through.
Yeah, there is no replacement for experience, is there?
There's not. And like I said, people are just too smart. So, you know, people might say you need to have this degree or you need to be a Buddhist or whatever. And that's not necessarily true. I mean, if you want a Buddhist mindfulness teacher, they're out there. And if you want somebody that's, I call myself a Heinz 57 or a mongrel, and they're too.
I love it.
Thing is that the degrees, I mean, the skill sets are important. The understanding of human psychology and behavior and all kinds of things are important to be grounded in when those things do come up so you are able to work with somebody. But it really is about the vibe that you get, that the degrees, you can you can have a therapist who's more messed up than you are.
So true. So true.
To people who are genuine and in it for the right reasons. And I don't want to sound like a broken record, but that is probably my best marketing strategy, is just to be real.
Be you. That's perfect. So in the mind, body, spirit arena, as I call it, we always have this feeling of icky marketing, and people seem to be turned off by it. So what do you think are the specific challenges that mind, body, spirit individuals face when creating their companies?
Well, I think it's different. I mean, because this is a broad field, and we talk about, I'll just put it out there. What I found to be really challenging is that years ago, when I first started out, that people in the general public arena had this sense that coaching and classes should, and I put those words, quote words around should, because the shoulds are not a great thing in life, but they felt that they should be offered for free. And the first time this came up was actually when The Secret had just come out. And I was writing a column for a New Age publication based in Atlanta, and I started getting these emails from people that said, I manifested you in my life. And I guess that meant they picked up the magazine and a they manifested me. It was like, oh, and so I want you to coach me for free. And I was like, well, this kind of blew my mind, and it still does today, because that's kind of the dark side of the law of attraction, is an entitlement that you think that just because somebody showed up, you're going to give me what I want. And my response was, and still is, do you work for free? And of course the answer is no. And then I'd say, well, why do you think I should work for free? So I had to educate people that just because you want something doesn't mean that person is supposed to just give it to you. It's more of a balanced energy exchange. And so I think one of the things that is an issue for a lot of people is we have, you know, giving it away for free is a lot of what the mindset is with the internet in particular. And so there's an expectation that things are supposed to be free. And there's teachers that give away classes and meditation courses for free because that's what's expected. But I feel that's unbalanced energetically. So I think that that's a challenge across the board. I have a lot of people say, well, they want me to just give it away. They want me to coach for free. And so part of that is educating people about, you know, it's not just about, you know, the manifesting doesn't mean you can be a spoiled brat. And so, you know, I offer affordable stuff for the general public. I have a twice weekly video recorded mindfulness talks and guided meditation practice membership, because I know it's important to have support. And I also know that psychologically they're finding in studies that a lot of people aren't really sticking with the free classes and the free apps and the free downloads and the MOOCs, the online courses that Coursera and other places are giving you. Like, they're free, but people aren't even making it all the way to the end. So making a tangible investment in yourself really gives you that psychological benefit of commitment. And Seth Godin, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's a really visionary marketing expert. And he wrote a column recently that I said, oh, right on. He said, you know, paying for something and making that commitment actually makes it better than free. And so I think that's the conundrum that some people come into in this area. Well, am I supposed to give it away for free? Well, what am I supposed to do? You know, and to be able to just stand in your dignity and say, as a teacher, you know, teaching is a service and it's a vocation with costs and time involved. And we've earned to be able to be paid for our services with dignity. So I think that that's all around the mind, body, spirit thing, is just standing up and realizing your sense of self-worth and educating people that, you know, it's an investment in themselves. And when they kind of get that, they get it a little bit more about the balance of energy.
Yeah. And I love the energy. I'm always saying that, you know, the flow of energy, money, and the more that you can bring in, the more you can give back, because you can't give what you don't have.
Right. And if you want abundance in your life, then you have to be willing to give it in equal measure.
Yep.
So, you know, I hear all these people, I want to make $1 million. And I'm like, well, what are you willing to give?
Right.
Oh.
I'll make $1 million and give $1 million. I'm good with that. determine your ideal client? Do you have a specific process you go through to know who you want to be working with?
Well, it's first of all, there are different levels of what I would call my clients or my student bases. And so with both individuals and organizational teams, because with mindful leadership, I'm working with organizations primarily, but I also work with individuals. And so the ideal client is really, no matter where they come from, is somebody that's committed to doing the work and investing themselves financially and energetically in everything that they're learning above all else. That's got to be number one. They've got to be committed to doing the work. So in an organization, those at the top need to embrace the work themselves first and then offer these types of trainings to their personnel. And I speak from experience from teaching in a corporate environment. So the best business client is one where the leadership and the management people, they walk the talk and they tangibly reflect it back to their employees to inspire them and to motivate them. And I often find that's easier when it's a smaller business or a startup. A lot of teachers like to name drop all the big corporations they've taught to, as that makes them look good on their pedigree and their CV. Yet, in my opinion, as well as my experience, that teaching in the corporate environment is more of a challenge because you've got a lot of people spread out all over the world, and getting everybody on board and creating a culture of mindfulness is a lot more of a challenge. So small businesses and startups might be a better place for this to come in. So, but the bottom line is they just got to be committed to doing the work.
Yeah, it doesn't help if they listen and then don't put anything into practice, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So for, I know you deal a lot with the board.
It's work, but I really like to frame it as play. More than, you know, we're going to struggle and go through all this hard stuff. And, you know, they don't like the word homework, you know, so, well, should we call it home play?
I like that.
We'll respond to. Bottom line is, you know, I feel that, you know, in order to make something beautiful grow, sometimes we need to get our hands dirty.
Hmm. That's really nice. I like that.
Thank you.
So I know you deal a lot word of mouth with your clients, but are you working in marketing on social media at all? And is something really working for you that you'd like to share?
Well, this is probably different than what other people might be saying to you. But as a mindfulness teacher, I find that social media can be a huge distraction for a lot of people. And they can waste a lot of time. They get sucked into the vortex of Facebook, and hours later they spin back out and go, where did my day go? And so to walk my talk, I really can't allow myself to get heavily pulled in and nor really encourage other people to do so. And that's just because of my field. We talk a lot about getting people away from multitasking and being focused in the present moment and not being distracted by, you know, all those things that are pulling their awareness and their attention away. So I have people will complain to me that they don't have time to meditate, but they can spend hours every day distracted by social media. So since my main focus is teaching mindful leadership skills, LinkedIn has actually been the best place for me personally to network and connect. And it's, like I said, it's different for everybody. I'm not a really big fan of Facebook because, you know, people will like your page and then they decide they're only going to give it to a couple of people into their news feed, even though, you know, they want to hear what you have to say. That's why they like your page. And I just kind of got mad with that whole attitude of pay $30 to put a post up at the top. And I'm like, come on, guys, you know. And then Twitter, I've had this feeling about Twitter for a while that for some people it works really well. And yet what I see goes on is that a lot of people just, they follow you because they want you to follow them. And they really don't care much about what you're doing. They never go to your website. They don't go to any of your other pages. They're collecting followers like me and, you know, like me back. And if you have 1,000 people following you, or you're following 1,000 people, you're never going to be able to give them your full attention. So I have a Facebook page, I have a Twitter page, but I really don't do a lot with it. If somebody's really interested in what I do, don't just follow me or like my pages, join my email list. That's where those numbers really work for me, is building an email list. And I also have public videos on YouTube. I think those are really probably the best promotional move I've ever made. As a teacher, it allows me to connect with people in a multidimensional way of what I do. And although I've had a blog for years, they're not investing the time as much to read. And I'm a writer, you know, I like to write more than 140 characters. So, you know, they're like, okay, they're checked out, they're somewhere else, they're texting or whatever, and they don't really want to invest the time as much as they used to. I mean, I think that's sad, because I think we're not reading as much as we should, and I don't want to put that should out there, but I'm seeing a real drop, and one of the best things you can do is read. So I still write my content. I just deliver it in a different way. And I have public videos. I have more than I'm putting up there. I'm really loving it. I use Adobe Presenter, which works really well. And, you know, I don't really think in terms of competition per se. I think if you're yourself, and you're going to attract the people who resonate with you, and those who don't will find somebody else. So videos kind of really give a great flavor of who you are, what you look like, what you sound like, what your energy is. So,
yeah, videos are priceless, really, especially, and I'll throw this out there for anyone listening, from a marketing SEO standpoint, when you're trying to get leads and stuff onto your website, that having video definitely is a huge plus, putting that out there.
Most it's a huge plus. And if you want to market yourself as a speaker, they've got to know, you know, how your energy comes through. And it can't come through the same way on a blog as it does with what they're going to see when they're in the audience with you.
Right.
Even if whether it's online or in person.
Most definitely. So how do you distinguish yourself from others in your field?
Ooh, this is my favorite question.
I like it.
Well, in my field with mindfulness, a lot of people who teach mindfulness skills, they focus on stress reduction and performance enhancement at work. And I address those benefits too, and I go a bit deeper. Leadership education is not just reserved for CEOs and managers. We all lead by our example, and it's contagious. And we all have a sphere of influence, whether it's at work or home or school or in our community, socially, and actually all the above. So what we think and what we do and how we behave has a ripple effect, and that's positive or negative. And we do have a choice as how we respond to life stressors. So we really can't compartmentalize leadership or mindfulness into, you know, one part of our lives and not just be a whole person. So, you know, it's not just about stress reduction. It's about how we treat our mind and our body and the example that it sets. So I also teach mindful eating and self-care. And following my emphasis on leading about mindful example, I teach people to go deeper than the basics and to begin to play big and to be able to look at their dark shadows and their blind spots with equanimity and kindness and patience and see that for most of us, there's some serious work that needs to be done, but we can take it on as a great adventure. And I like to say that you can be the Indiana Jones of your own inner archaeology dig.
That's
you
cool.
Go inside of yourself, and there's some junk you're going to come across you got to toss. There's also some hidden gems that you can discover when you go in and learn about yourself. And you get those out and you polish them off. And then there's those snake pits that you learn how to avoid falling into. So, you know, that's a large part of how I look at approaching mindfulness, particularly in leadership skills. But the other thing that really sets me apart the most, I think, is that I don't just follow the rules. I color outside the lines. And some people like that and some people don't, but this is who I am. So there's a lot of people in my field, like, you know, they're very attached to certain ways of teaching. They follow strict, you know, formats that they've learned, different ways of schools that teach certain formats and scripts and how you got to follow a process of how many weeks it is and what you do every week. And some people think if you aren't a Buddhist and you don't have a master's in psychology, like I said before, that you're not qualified. Carlos Castaneda's books, Course in Miracles to lyrics from rock musicians and, you know, lines from great fiction and movies. And I meet people where they're at. And I tend to be inclusive and not create separation. So that's how I'm a little bit different. You know, I don't follow the strict rules. And I think that that's, you know, for me that works, and that inclusivity and being a bit of a Heinz 57 person who will, and I use truth and wisdom wherever I come across it. If it, you know, if it works in a classroom situation, I'm there. I will improvise in the moment. You know, I just can't follow this rigid pattern. And I like to have fun. I like to play. And I really couldn't bear it if all my students were like really somber. And the great thing is that if they're looking for that kind of teacher, they can find that person.
Right. It's just not you.
No, I like to have a good time.
Nothing wrong with that.
Laughter is one of the best yogas out there, you know.
I know. And I love to laugh. In fact, I think I laugh too much. People look at me and they're like, gosh, you're always laughing. And I had to actually catch myself. If anyone goes back and listens to the first few podcasts that I did, I was laughing the whole time. And you're like, you couldn't hear the other people. To bring that under control.
Nah.
So, now, and I'm going to, I'll probably edit this part out, but I didn't see on your website that you had authored a book, but you talked about writing a lot. Do you have a book?
I did. Well, okay.
So if you did, just say it.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So then I'm going to ask you about being an author. So I'll like phrase the question, but, cause I didn't see that. So, okay. I'll let you do your talk. Hold on. I don't know why I just totally lost my frame of thought.
Take a breath.
So talk to me a little bit about your book and how you authored it and whether you self-published or went traditional publishing and the whole experience.
Well, first let me talk about a book that I wrote in 2005 that I self-published, and it was a workbook, and it was titled Affirmative Actions, Eyes Open Meditations for Women. And I'm actually revising that. So, it's 9 years ago that I wrote that.
Wow.
And I'm revising it because I'm actually moving part of one of my leadership training is going to be working with women. And the book was inspired actually by that teacher that I mentioned, not only with spiritual etiquette, but he also taught about why don't more women attain enlightenment? And I went with that, and I looked at all the patterns that women have been taught in terms of competition with one another and scarcity mentalities and things that we do to sabotage our success and our relationships and all kinds of things. And so that was how that book was created. And so the revision of that is going to take another step further to work into how we can actually lead into the world. Now, another book that I'm working on is Everyday Mindful Leadership, We All Lead by Our Example. And that's a book for anybody that has an influence on other people's lives, not just CEOs and managers. So that's pretty much all of us. But it really is about everyday steps that we take in every moment, no matter where we're at, and how we can lead more mindfully. And I probably will self-publish that. I think because I don't have the patience to work with how long it takes to get books published in the traditional market, and they're like, oh, well, you can have it out from 2 years from now. I'm like, but that's not soon enough. So I think self-publishing is, and that's the way it's going for so many people, whether you're in book publishing or you're in the music business. Everybody is taking their own empowerment and saying, I'm going to do it my way. And I'm not going to, you know, work with an intermediary and ebook publishing and all that, and then the accessibility to promote those and get them in the hands of people that really can benefit from that material. I do think that that is the way of the future.
Yeah, and it just gives you so much more control. But I will say for my listeners to remember, self-publishing does not mean you do it all yourself. I mean, you just don't go the traditional publishing route, but you still have a team that helps you through it, or it might really take you 2 years.
Yes. And even, you know, even if you're a good writer, and everybody thinks they're a good writer because everybody writes a blog. And some people are really great writers, but they're not great editors.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the most important things, is to have another eye, a skillful eye, look at what you have to say and know what to take out and what to adjust.
Absolutely. I don't think there's no amount of money to, like, when you get a good editor, like, that is where the money should be spent. Because if not, you look back and you're like, wow, what happened? They can make you sound really good.
Yes. And also, you know, I'll tell you, I don't know why this happened, and maybe it's not so much happening, but for a while, the traditional marketing, the book publishing was all the big mucky mucks that were coming out, they all had a big head on the cover. The attention's not about me. It's about the work. I mean, you put my head there somewhere, but I don't want a book with my big head on.
Here I am. So what has been your biggest challenge with marketing?
First of all, I think that a lot of people are out there that are trying to sell you their product or their service to increase your exposure to potential clients. And we get inundated with all these different people coming at us. You know, this is the way to do it. This is, you know, this is going to get you, you know, the access to the people that you want. And that can be overwhelming. And, you know, we just have overwhelmed to begin with. You know, we just have so many people coming at us in all directions. And what I've learned is the biggest challenge in so many people doing similar types of things, whether it's mindfulness or anywhere in mind, body, spirit work, is to be able to stand out and not just grab somebody's attention with being able to throw a lot of glitter and glitz and into a marketing campaign, but to be somebody that has a message that resonates and is a little bit different than not just a repackaging of what somebody else said. So how I dealt with that, first I said, well, gosh, you know, I need to find some kind of a mentor to teach me, you know, that part, you know, how do you genuinely stand out in a noisy world? And I mentioned Seth Godin a while ago, and he wrote a book called Tribes. Right. And it really was about learning how to create your tribe and the people that are naturally going to be attracted to you. And to do so, again, the authentic word comes in. So he was probably the biggest mentor for me to just say, be yourself, you know. And then his name is James Altucher. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he just published with Hay House. He's been around with a lot of, he just came out with a book called The Power of No. And he wrote a book called Choose Yourself. And I thought, oh, yeah, you choose yourself, be yourself, choose who you are to put out in the world. Don't try to be somebody else. I think it was Mae West or somebody that the quote is, and I'm not saying it perfectly, but nobody can be you better than you.
Yeah.
And so that was really the thing, is to sit down and really distill, who am I? And then go from there in terms of marketing. I also, there's a couple other people that I'd like to mention. One guy who you probably wouldn't even think is related, but it works for me because I think it's important to understand how quickly the marketplace changes. And he writes for the music industry, but he has a lot that he writes about that translates to market trends, whether it's in the software business or, you know, what kind of phone you should be, you know, buying, or what's going on with Samsung and Apple and all that stuff. And so to really be on top of somebody has a pulse and has input, and sometimes he's really brutally honest, but I'd rather hear people tell me what I need to hear than what I want to hear.
Yep.
And so this guy, his name is Bob Lefsetz. And he's out of LA, and he, like I said, he's in the music, writes for the music industry, and he writes something called the Lefsetz Letter. And he's very prolific. I mean, he'll send out these long things every day. Yet he's got something that I think is valuable no matter what you're doing. He understands things. The last thing is, I recently just came upon this guy. His name is Jeff Walker. And he just published a book about launching a successful business online, and it immediately went to number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And the book is called Launch, and it's got a really It's like an internet millionaire secret formula, blah, 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 blah. But it's not one of these get rich quick books.
No.
That's what I really liked about it. It's like very down to earth. It says, you know, I came into this and this is what works and this is what doesn't work and don't waste your time. And it was written for a lot of people that are at the beginning and that don't have a lot of resources. And so they can help them, you know, not throw money at, you know, all these people that are coming at you saying this is what you have to do. It helps you kind of think a little bit and weed out what might be helpful for you. Yeah. And I think, you know, client referrals is also an important marketing tool because their endorsement, you know, is probably worth more than anything that you're going to throw into any promotional plan.
Yes, yeah, so the power of someone saying, I had a great experience, it's invaluable for sure.
Yeah, and generally, you know, the people that you do something for, that they like what you do, they're going to connect you with somebody else who's like-minded and like-hearted. So it's not like you've got to do some heavy sell job and, you know, get your elevator pitch and all that stuff in. It just is a natural process. I mean, I can't do that. You know, that stuff that everybody feels is yucky. It really has to be an emanence from you. It is who you are. There's really no distinction between who you are and what you do. And you're just passionate about it. You want to share the story about how it's helped so many people. And the best thing for me is not the amount of money I've made in terms of teaching mindfulness skills to people. It's hearing the stories that they have told. Amazing, life-changing, life-saving stories. And that's why I do what I do.
That's beautiful. I love that. If you had to look back at your journey and then do it all over again, knowing what you know today, what would you do differently?
Well, I've been told by a lot of people. I mean, I'm 58 years old, so I've been around for a while. I've been playing with this stuff for a while. And I've been told that I'm ahead of the curve. And whatever it was, I'm like, you were already there before everybody else got there. And now everybody else is talking about hot yoga, but you were doing hot yoga 5 years ago. You're not even doing it anymore. So I really consistently witnessed that you know, what I'm passionate about teaching is not embraced by the mainstream for, you know, right in the moment. Sometimes it's years later. And teaching about mindfulness is just one example. I've been teaching about it years before it's become this big thing. I mean, it's big now, it's hot now. So I think what I do differently, and you're gonna laugh, but I think I'd buy a time machine.
I have never had that answer before.
I'd move myself, probably be easier to move myself forward than move everybody back to her. But everything that I've done is part of the process, and I don't have any regrets of what I've learned, even the times that I've stumbled. I look at every challenge as an opportunity to learn and grow from. And so I think that that's really the most important thing. And I think we're moving into a second wave of mindfulness. And so this is kind of where I'm at. And people are starting, you know, they went through the first wave. They're learning to be present and aware and accepting and non-judgmental. And they know that that doesn't mean, well, I'm okay, you're okay. I mean, that's not how that really works. So what I do is I really work with proactive, deliberate mindfulness practices that really put you eye to eye with everything that you've managed to hold at arm's length, with every kind of roadside distraction that comes your way, and still sit still in that present moment, being truly here and now with radically honest self-reflection, say, you know, when you're sitting in meditation and something comes up, and instead of running away from it, instead of pushing it away or avoiding it or escaping it, you're able to see that this particular thing that you see about yourself isn't very pretty, it's not really cool, it's not really enlightened, it's not even nice. But you learn to accept who you are right now and all your imperfect humanness, and it looks like I got some more work to do. And so I think the next wave of mindfulness is going to be a lot more proactive, of people taking on these challenges with a whole heart and a whole mind to do something that, you know, you think it's really simple. It's, you just sit there and you breathe and, you know, it's nice and you're calming down. But there's also the ability for mindfulness to really change and rearrange your life experience in very productive and very positive and very transformative ways. I like to use the word, I don't know if I actually coined it or I use it a lot, but it's inter-revolutionary. It's really a revolution from within that mindfulness can take you on, that you can just go through an endless journey.
I love that. That's an inner revolutionary. I don't think I've heard that before, but I like that.
I think I made it up.
Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So now that you're on this beautiful path and you've got this great business, what's your next phase for building your platform and your business?
Well, mindful leadership is, what's great is that, you know, we had that, again, in the first level was a lot about MBSR classes and, you know, distress reduction as a focus. And now people are moving from staying in wellness, but also moving into mindful leadership. And it's an evolving field, and I'm really excited to be growing along with it. So there are some people I'm looking to partner with on projects that are going to take me into some different markets. I'm really excited about that. I mentioned mindful leadership training for women. I think that's something I know I'm going to bring into with reworking the book that I wrote and bringing that inner revolutionary aspect into it. And working on my everyday mindful leadership book, because we all lead by our example. I'm going to continue with mindful eating and self-care. It's something I've been passionate about since I was in high school. That's like the head of the curve. I was in high school in the 70s.
You have been ahead of the curve. I love it.
And so now with, you know, our current obesity crisis, and there's an increase in diabetes and metabolic syndrome and eating disorders. And I've seen that mindful eating and self-care, which go in together, they go hand in hand. I've seen people, it's not a diet. It's a way of changing your relationship with everything in life, and eating is just one part of it. Learn that brings you into the present moment. Learn to have honor and respect for how your body works and how the psychological aspects with eating. So I think that that's going to continue to grow and help a lot of people. It's very holistic knowledge. But I mentioned that I just launched this. I mean, literally like 2 weeks ago, a twice weekly guided mindfulness talks and guided meditation practice video recordings, because I think it's very important. You know, you go on a course and you go to a mindfulness course or a retreat, and then you're back in the world with a bunch of mindless people, and you might not have a place to go practice. And ongoing support is really important to stay consistent and to grow in mindfulness, you know. So I thought, you know, I'm filling this void that I think, you know, other people are filling it in different ways, but I have a way with how I do it. And so it's for all levels of practice support. So I want to see that grow, because I think it's very, very important to continue with practice. And you can get a lot of the, you know, the usual MP3s, the body scans, and the different types of normal meditation practices. But I go a little step more. I take 20 minutes. I give a themed talk, a guided practice for, you know, not real long. The whole thing is around 20 minutes or so. I bring in proactive affirmations, which is not a lot used in mindfulness. And then I cap it off with informal daily life exercises that you can do to bring mindfulness into everything that you do. So it's not just sitting on the mat. It's taking that relationship with your mind and bringing it into proactively into the world. And I offer a two-week free trial, and I have preview videos on the site. And I think it's really great. We just did this week, I focused on impeccability versus perfectionism. And as we know, perfectionism is very toxic, and impeccability is different. It's a different way of choosing to be conscious in how you show up around things in life. So I'm just moving into that second tier of different types of ways to teach about mindfulness. And so these practices, I have a colleague, I don't want to name drop, but he's from a pretty important institution. So I really like the fact that he likes it. He's like, wow, these are like just mini webinars. And you just can go in there, you can just take this knowledge, you get a, you know, you can practice, you can breathe, you get a little nugget of inspiration, you go out into your day and you bring it into your life. And that's where it's contagious. So it was kind of nice to get that from somebody who I respect greatly. And that's really the important thing about mindfulness, you know, and I would like to share with all of your listeners in terms of the emphasis on the education that I provide. You know, we practice mindfulness not to just personally feel better or to improve our performance at work or at school. We practice because we honestly and humbly own the impact that our thoughts and our choices and our actions and behaviors have upon everybody that crosses our path. And the opportunity that we're given to lead by mindful example in our own sphere of influence. So it doesn't matter whether you're a CEO, you're a parent, you're a rock star, you're a truck driver, a waitress, any role that you have at any given moment in any situation is where you can show up and you can lead by an example. So even on those mornings when I don't really feel like meditating, you know, you don't have time, and you know, which is really not it's one of those quote good excuses. Remember, it's not just about you. You know, you're not doing this just for yourself. It really is about the change of your own energy field and what you put out in the world. And everybody wants to change the world. You know, they want it to be better. It all starts with us and just that little bit that we put out. We don't have to be Gandhi. We don't have to be JFK. We don't have to be anybody big. But we do have people that we influence. So it's our kids, our friends, our teachers, our boss, you know. And that is a way to keep inspired, to allow that awareness to be part of your discipline and incentive to practice.
I love it. That's beautiful. I just love listening to you. It's like you hit all these great points.
Well, thank you. I mean, this really is, and this is who I am. This is my life, you know. And like I said, I would do it even if I didn't get paid for it. But it's even better to get paid well for it.
You can hear the passion, which is amazing. So I'm sure my listeners hear the passion as well. And if they wanted to find out more about you, where would they find you?
Well, I think the best thing to do is to go to my website. It is the Center for Mindful Leadership, and that's a lot of words to make, you know, to buy as a URL. So I made it simple for myself and everybody else. So you think the Center for Mindful Leadership, those are just the letters TCFML, the Center for Mindful Leadership. Or did I transpose that?
No, you did good.
TCFML, and it's .org because I am working as a nonprofit educational organization, and I invite everybody to join my e-list. Special offers are only made to people that subscribe, and that really, like I said, that e-list is my main focus of where my numbers and where my connection, where my reach seems to matter the most to me. You can join me on Facebook and Twitter. I really would love to have you as part of my tribe. And again, I offer a free 2-week trial to my mindfulness talks and guided meditation practice membership video recordings. So I'd love to see everybody take advantage of that, since consistent formal and informal practice is so important to grow in mindful awareness.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for all of the information. It's been a wonderful interview.
Thank you. It's just, again, I'm grateful for the opportunity and to connect with all your listeners. I wish you all the very best.
You have been listening to The Mindful Marketing Show with me, your host, Kimberly Maska. You can get more information about this episode and all of my episodes at mindfulmarketingshow.com. There you will find all of the show notes and links to the books and business resources we discussed. Again, that's mindfulmarketingshow.com. Until next time, be passionate, be inspired, and live your dream. Have a beautiful day.